From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Megan Mack. Our connection this hour was made in a Zumba class, where the instructor, a woman named Kathy, was fulfilling a lifelong dream. Kathy was a Zumba lover and had always wanted to teach a class, but until now, she didn't think she could. Kathy is one of millions of Americans who have a disability. She's also one of an increasing number of New Yorkers who are choosing self-direction. If you haven't heard of self-direction, you're not alone. It's an emerging method for people with disabilities to choose the types of supports and services that work best for them. Self-direction empowers people to design their own days and activities, live independently or in a home of community of their choice, and it gives them more control over the funding they receive for their daily services. So back to Kathy. With self-direction, she started volunteering at an assisted living facility. She took knitting classes and piano lessons. She taught that Zumba class, and she says she learned skills she never thought she'd be able to gain. She also says she's a much happier, more confident person and is able to use her voice to live the life she wants. This hour, we're talking about the self-direction process, what it means for people in our community, and how to make more programs and opportunities more inclusive for people with disabilities who want to live independently. I'd like to welcome my guest for the hour. J.D. Flores is a disability rights advocate who is in the beginning stages of the self-direction process. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Joy Steele has worked in the developmental disabilities field for 30 years. She's the mother of a young man utilizing self-directed services, and she's also the director of family advocacy at Starbridge. And I'll also mention she's the co-founder of In the Driver's Seat. Welcome to you, Joyce.
Thank you. Welcome.
Be the longest title I've ever read. You're busy. And before we move forward, Joyce, what is Starbridge?
So Starbridge is a local agency. Actually, it's fairly new. It's 2 years old. It's the result of a merger of the Advocacy Center and the Learning Disabilities Association. And we actually partner with people with disabilities and their families to support them to realize their fulfilling possibilities, whether that be in the community, employment, education, so that they can really live a life that works for them, that they choose to work for them.
And you're also the co-founder of In the Driver's Seat, as I mentioned. That's a website. Can you share a little bit about that?
Sure. In the Driver's Seat is a website designed to support people that are interested in utilizing self-directed options, and it helps them navigate the services and supports available.
Great. Also in studio today, Sue Ormandy is a self-direction liaison at the Finger Lakes Regional Office for People with Developmental Disabilities. Welcome to you.
Thank you.
And Molly Clifford is the president of the Board of Directors of Prevention First, also a member of Rochester City Council. Welcome back.
Thanks, Megan.
And what is Prevention First, Molly?
So Prevention First is a local nonprofit that focuses on fire safety and injury prevention for high-risk populations, so children, older adults, people with developmental disabilities, all of whom do have a higher risk of death or injuries in fires and other situations.
And I know you've been working on a project that we'll talk about more later in the hour to help people who are living independently stay safe. So listeners, we have a lot to address this hour, and we also want to take your questions or comments, especially if you're someone who has a disability and you're starting this self-direction process, or it's something that you're not familiar with. Now's the chance to ask your questions. You can call the program at 844-295-TALK. That's 844-295-8255. Or if you're in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-999. So let's start right at the beginning. For those who are listening and may not know what self-direction is, what, JD, is the definition in your words of self-direction? What does it mean to you?
It means doing what I want when I want, kind of. So I'm new to the self-direction process, like formally, but I live a self-directed life. I do what I want when I want. Well, I guess within reason, because there's a lot of outside factors, but for a majority, I do what I want. So I work where I want, I play where I want, live where I want. These are all choices that I get to make.
Mm-hmm. We talked a little before the show, and you said that you've heard from people in the disability community who don't know what this is. What do you think the barrier is in sharing the information?
Well, in this community specifically, I think one of the big barriers is language. We're a sanctuary city, so we don't just all have one language. There's hundreds of them in the world, but there's plenty of them here in the city of Rochester. So you have to have kind of an in. You have to know someone who is living a self-directed life, who is in the self-direction program, to kind of be aware. And if they're not in your inner circles, then you don't know. And so you lack that information. And then it's also like a race, class, gender kind of thing. Like, So black and brown folks, they don't necessarily always have access to this information that our white counterparts do, just because we don't have a way to, you know, get to those agencies that have the pamphlets or have the information or can tell you what the process is like. So it's very limiting in that sense. So I came from Puerto Rico. My mother doesn't speak English. My father doesn't speak English. And so it's more so like a guess and check kind of thing. And we get lucky sometimes. We know someone that knows something. And then there's other times where we just don't know. So we have to figure out how to make things work. So this is another reason why I'm so late to self-direction, because of just how my social circles are set up. Until one of my friends started using self-direction, it wasn't a thing to me until I, you know, got into a circle with a LEND Fellowship, which is a program run through the U of R, was another reason until I learned about self-direction. So I lived a self-directed life, but not formally, because the other agencies that I work with, it's also very new. They didn't know how it all worked.
Mm-hmm. Molly and Sue, is that something that you're coming across, you're hearing from people who say, I didn't know this kind of method or service was available. How can I access it?
Well, it was definitely news to me. This is Molly. And it really came about because we do a bunch of training in the community, and a number of disabilities organizations that we worked with said, wow, you know, this is something that individuals could really use, not just us agencies, because there are so many more people who are choosing self-direction and living more independently. And that began a long education process for us as we learned a little bit more about that. And that's how we got to know Joyce. And in the driver's seat. So it really is a great thing. But for people who aren't involved in that world, you wouldn't know anything about it.
Mm-hmm. Who is eligible for self-direction? Is there an eligibility process by which you have to go through?
Anyone that is eligible for OPWDD services has Medicaid, has a Medicaid service coordinator, and is enrolled in the HCBS waiver is eligible to have a self-directed plan.
Okay, and HCBS is home and community-based services.
Right.
Okay, and so I was reading about this process online, trying to understand it, and JD and Joyce, jump in here if I'm getting anything wrong. So if you're seeking to live a self-directed life in this formal way, you need a group or a team. I'm sorry, I can't quite remember what it's called.
Circle of support.
Circle of support. Thank mm-hmm. you, Joyce. Circle of support. Who does the circle of support include?
Actually, the circle of support can include anyone that the person with the disability wants to be in their circle to help them guide and support them as they decide what kind of life that they really want to live, a life that works for them. So it can be friends, neighbors. It can be, you know, people that you've been supported by in your past. It really can be anybody. Mm-hmm. But it's up to the person with the disability to make that decision who's in their circle.
So my supportive circle would be like my mother, my godfather, my brother, and my two best friends. My two best friends kind of drive me all around the city and take me to wherever I got to go. And so they kind of jump in whenever I, you know, need help or, you know.
But you also do need a Medicaid service coordinator, a fiscal intermediary, and a support broker. Help us understand that.
So the support broker actually is, you have the Medicaid service coordinator first. That person then helps guide you to hopefully interview support brokers. So the support brokers are the ones that help you identify your needs and goals along with your circle of support, and then develop a plan that's submitted to the local DDRO here, that portion of the OPWDD. So that's their role. And then they continue in the role along the way to make sure that they help you navigate to make sure that you're doing exactly what it is you said you wanted to do. And if you want to make changes, they help you make those changes and submit the appropriate paperwork and things like that.
Mm-hmm. So what is step one? Say someone is hearing this on the show right now. They think this is something that would work for them. What is the very first step that someone would take? Where would they go?
They would talk to their MSC, because mm-hmm. that's the first step that I'm, mm-hmm. that's kind of where I'm at right mm-hmm. now. So I switched agencies because my previous MSC didn't really know how to work the service. So I went to Christian Heritage, and so I said, you know, I want to do self-direction. I want to buy a house. Like, that's, I know I can do it with self-direction. That's what I want to do. So she, you know, we filled out the regular paperwork that you do with your MSC, and then you start the process for self-direction. There's a workshop that you have to go to, mm-hmm. and then I believe you go from there to get your broker and get your FIA or FII?
FI.
Sorry,
FI. Fiscal intermediary.
Yeah.
And that's the agency or the entity that helps manage your budget.
Okay. Okay. And where can you find more information online? Where's the best place to go? Is it in the driver's seat?
It's in the driver's seat for sure, and you can go to OPWDD's website as well.
Okay. Yeah,
they have a whole section just for self-direction.
Perfect. And actually, most agencies that are supporting families, individuals utilizing self-direction have information on their websites as well.
Okay, great. Listeners, I know we just did a very broad look at self-direction in terms of how you access services. So if you have more technical questions or questions for any of those on the panel who have used it, again, you can call the program at 844-295-TALK. That's 844-295-8255. Or if you're in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. You can also email the program at connections@WXXI.org. And I'm on Twitter at mmacmedia. So, Joyce, self-direction is a process that you navigated very successfully with your son, Adam, mm-hmm. and he's 36 now, mm-hmm. correct?
Yeah.
You mentioned yesterday when we were talking before the program, the process gave him more control of his day-to-day. How did you get to that point that you knew that he was ready for that process?
I think I mentioned to Megan that he'd actually had lived in a group home for about 15 years. And self-direction 15 years ago really wasn't a thing that you could advocate for or access for people with disabilities. But then about 10 years ago, he actually just made it clear through a variety of ways. When he can't come to visit us for the weekend, he really did not want to go back to the group home. When he'd go back to the group home, he would have to do things that really weren't in line with what he wanted to do with his life. And they would see some behaviors, and I don't even like using that word behaviors, but he just didn't want to do it and made it clear that he didn't want to do it. So we talked to him about utilizing self-direction, explained what it is in a way that he could really understand, that he would have control and choices and lead a life that really, really works for him. So he was on board, and again, you know, he couldn't say, yeah, Mom, I want to utilize self-direction, but he let us know, so much so that he would go back to the group home, because it was a process that we had to go through, and say, we've got to go buy furniture because I'm moving next week. So when things like that let us know how eager and how excited he was to utilize self-directed options and services. But as I mentioned to you, it didn't happen overnight. It took us probably about 3 years of starting and stopping before we felt we really had a really good plan that would support him in a way that would help him be successful.
Can you tell us a little bit about Adam's story? So I know that you recognized some changes in him when he was very young, mm-hmm. and that led you to make certain decisions that some people you said were very critical of. Can you tell us about what happened when he was three, and then what happened from there?
Well, sure. When he was 48 hours old, he was diagnosed. He had a cerebral vascular accident, which is a really big stroke. And up until the time he really had to use his executive functioning, we really didn't see a lot of changes or a lot of need to provide extra support. But once he needed those critical skills, we enrolled him in preschool and got him in a segregated educational classroom, which these days is not the norm. I would do it differently if he was being born now. But then by the time he turned 13, we started to see some significant behaviors that were actually harmful to not only him, but my other children as well. So we made the really, really tough decision to put him in a group home in Utica that was actually funded by both State Ed and OPWDD. And so he stayed there for a little while until he was 18. And then he made it clear that he wanted to be closer to his family. And we wanted him to be closer to us. It was not great. It was the only program of its kind in the state, which is why he went there. But it wasn't great not having him close by and being part of the family. So we then moved him to a group home in Canandaigua, and after that from a Canandaigua to a group home in Dansville. And I think I also mentioned to you, that was back in the days where you were encouraged to have your kids on a list, right, a waiting list to get into a residential placement, because those really were the only options for young adults with disabilities. I guess the other option was to keep them at home all the time, but how do you do that? Because we didn't have self-directed options to support people living at home as well. So that's really kind of his path. And he's been living in an apartment in our home for 6 years as of November 30th. And he will proudly tell you that because he can totally remember the dates that are important to him in his life.
Mm-hmm. And I know you said that when you dropped him off at the group home, helped move him in, that was the hardest day of your life.
Yes, absolutely. Harder than anything I'd ever been through. Mm-hmm. Yeah. When we dropped him off, I kept thinking that it was kind of this odd out-of-body experience. I kept thinking, I'm really not going to leave him here. I'm really not going to leave him here. And then you drive away, and I'm thinking, oh, my God, what have I just done? But I do believe at the time it was the best decision with what we knew, mm-hmm. right? So we did it. But I always knew in the back of my head that wasn't going to be the end game for him. I always knew if there were other opportunities that we would take advantage of them. But it wasn't easy to take advantage of those opportunities. You know, I've worked in the business for 30 years, And it was hard for us to navigate self-directed services and options. So I can't imagine what it's like for families either new to OPWDD or, you know, just hearing about self-direction. But best decision we've ever made. And I think Adam would agree.
And then I also think you mentioned when you decided that, or he decided that he was ready for independent living, some people were critical of you moving him out of the group home.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, it's very difficult to understand what someone's going through. I mean, I don't I shouldn't make judgments about what other people. I'm certainly not doing that. But without living that experience, it's difficult for people to understand what your day-to-day looks like, what his day-to-day looks like, and to understand the conversations that your family's having. So when you did, or the whole family decided, it's time for us to pursue self-direction, why do you think people said, how dare you move him out of
because
the group
home? Because they thought that Adam was living a good enough life in the group home, so why bother? If he was happy, if he was doing things that, you know, that somewhat fulfilled him, then why bother? And I keep saying to those people, but we didn't make that decision. If Adam was bursting at the seams and doing things that he really wanted to do that made him happy, that helped him to live a fulfilled life, we wouldn't have moved him, quite honestly. And I would be the first to say it's not for everybody. Self-direction is not for everybody. I believe in a continuum of services. But he made it clear that he wanted to move. And then when people say, well, you moved him from his friends and, you know, his routine, he didn't have any friends in the group home, to be quite honestly, and he didn't love the routine that he had because it wasn't a routine that was really helping him live his life the way he wanted to live it.
I think it's important to say, and Molly and Sue and JD, jump in if you'd like, that every experience is different for everyone. There may be people listening who have family members who are living in a group home, or maybe someone in a group home is listening and thinking, I love my group home. I love my family here. This is my home. I have a friend whose daughter lives in a group home, and it's worked out very, very well for her. So, Sue and Molly, when you're working with people in the disability community, how do you help them decide what the best option might be for them if they're struggling finding a balance?
Well, I think the great thing, and you know, you certainly hear it from Joyce's story, is now there are so many more options. And so, you know, depending on the individual and their own strengths and weaknesses, their own desires, there really is an option for everybody. So I think the way that I've heard self-direction described is, you know, that it really does give people the opportunity to live their best lives and be their best selves. And that's what we want for everyone, you know, no matter their ability. So that's, I think, what's been so great getting to know this community and know this world is that, you know, as you have already heard, there's lots of acronyms and there's lots of paperwork, and I don't think any of that really goes away. But the ability, again, to just sort of live life the way you want to live is such a great addition to the scope.
And Adam's living the life that he really wants to live now. He's doing some really awesome things.
He is doing amazing things, yes.
He's got a blog that he's working on that we should talk about.
Rock the Burger.
Rock the Burger.
Yeah, it's ready to roll out. Actually, they just sent me the proofs for the, actually, they sent Adam the proofs. Together, we're making a decision about what his logo is going to look like. He's got a jingle that goes along with it. And he and his phenomenal support staff person, Jeff, actually go around town and eat burgers and really blog about, you know, the experience of the, you know, the place that they eat and what the burger tasted like. And they're also doing some DIY burgers as well, do-it-yourself burgers. So that should be rolling out within the next month or so. So he's really excited about that.
That's very cool. Yeah. He's also volunteering.
He volunteers. He volunteers 2 times a week at Meals on Wheels. I think I mentioned to you, he walks dogs. He volunteers at a local nursing home. And then he works part-time with his sister at the local wine store in Cornhill. And my husband has a small, small coffee business, and he helps my husband with the coffee business as well.
That's wonderful.
So, yeah. But these are things that he gets to choose to do. We're not ramming them down his throat saying, let's do this, let's do this. He's making those choices. And he wants to do a lot more. So we work with him on how to make that happen as well. Again, it doesn't happen overnight, but it didn't happen overnight for any of our kids, right? So we want to support him just like we supported our other two kids living the life that they're living. So,
JD, you're out in the community speaking to schools and people in the disability community and people who don't really understand the disability community. What do you think, how do they view self-direction? Do they have a good understanding of what this means yet?
I don't think so, because self-direction is something we know. It's not something, it's like, you don't have to talk about it to anybody else because it doesn't affect them, you know what I mean? I mean, you should talk about it so they understand what it is and that it's an option, but it's not necessarily something that I need to say to my friends, like, oh, I'm doing this self-direction thing, because it doesn't, it doesn't matter to them. You know, it's a system that they don't exist within. It's a system I exist within, but, you know, so I think because of who I am personally, my friends, you know, they've gained a lot of knowledge and they know a lot of different things about the DD world, disability world. But it's not necessarily something that I go out to tell everyone, like, oh, you know, self-direction is a thing and this is what's happening. Because you kind of, as an advocate, I've learned to learn my audience. And there's some things that just don't need, you know, they just don't need to know because it's such a rural thing. Like, it's, you know, like I said, I informally have been living a self-directed life my whole life. So just putting this stamp on it now that it'll give me more services is something that is going to benefit me. But in the grand scheme of things, I don't know how different it would be for my friends to really know about it or for people. But if I was talking to my friends with disabilities, of course, I would definitely tell them because it can benefit them. You know, it will bring value to their life. And not that it doesn't bring value overall, but it's just something that is so service specific that I don't know how necessary it is to have that kind of conversation.
Mm-hmm. Let's get to the phones. First up on the phones is John in Rochester. Hi, John.
Hi.
Hi, go ahead.
I just wanted to call with a staff perspective. I work as a self-directed staff, actually full time. I worked in the field for 10 years and moved in the last 2 years over to working with people that solely have self-directed plans. And just the flexibility that it offers people, I think, is awesome. And as a staff person, it offers me some flexibility. I have a young daughter and... you know, a way to have a career in the field. You know, I get paid very well, and you know, the people I support get to do the things that are the most meaningful to them. Which, so you know, definitely the most meaningful job I've had in the field is doing self-direction. So,
thank you, John. Thanks for sharing that perspective. Molly, how does that make you feel when you hear calls like that?
Well, I think that's, you know, great input, and you know, Thank you, John, and thank you for doing what you're doing, because obviously sometimes it can be tough work, and sometimes it's hard to find good people who are in the field. So John is obviously somebody who really cares about what he does and has found that self-direction really works for the people that he works with. So that is absolutely terrific to hear.
I imagine that relationship between someone like John and the person that he's working with is very critical, and really having a good understanding between, you know, both people is important. Joyce, I know you've experienced that with Adam.
Yeah, it took us probably a good 4 years before we finally got the hang of it. You know, I've mentioned, and we only have utilized at a time maybe 3 or 4 staff people, but I've got friends that are utilizing 5, 6, and 7 staff people. So I've said it's actually like running a small business at times. But it took us about 4 years, and we had great staff, but we were trying to figure out the rhythm and what that would look like and what was really best for Adam. So he kind of guided us along the way, and we finally, within the past year and a half, have figured out kind of the staffing ratio that really works for him and also the kind of person that really works for him. And I even feel awkward calling them staff because they just really don't feel like staff. I mean, they're infused into that person's life, into our son's life every single day, you know, 30, 35 hours a week. So it doesn't even feel like they're staff. They just know what to do, right? They support Adam in a way that doesn't take away from who Adam is. So the person he has right now, Jeff, and Jeff is probably listening, by the way. Jeff and Adam are both listening. I mean, he supports Adam when Adam needs support, but in a way that doesn't take away from Adam's ability to shine. And he fades away so that Adam can be who he needs to be as well. So, but it's really been trial by error, you know, baptism by fire. But we finally developed, and it's actually on the In the Driver's Seat website, we developed kind of a protocol that worked for us and, you know, are giving that information to other families when it comes to, you know, hire, train, and retain staff as well. Because that's, in this industry especially, but I think any family that you talk to, that's one of the biggest barriers and one of the biggest concerns regarding self-direction is the staffing piece.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Sue.
And our role at the DDRO is really not to choose for the person, like you guys are saying, but to offer the option of self-direction. And we do a lot of education to families, individuals, stakeholders, agencies, the community, schools, to get information out there the best we can. This program has grown since the inception of the current self-directed program 800% in the Finger Lakes area alone. So we've got a lot of work to do in all of that. I think we've been somewhat successful. I do feel bad that there are some stakeholders that aren't as informed as they need to be, but that's something that we'll definitely note.
JD, I saw you nodding as well. Do you have people that you work with on a daily basis?
Well, I did as a child. So my mom had staff coming in and out of the house. And so when I wouldn't want to call them staff because they're my family members. They became my old aunts or whatever. Mm-hmm. They just became part of my family. I became part of their family. You know, some of my aides, I know their kids. I grew up with their kids. I went to their basketball games. They came to our house for birthday parties. I went to their house. So it kind of, if you get the right person, like it's a weird equation to create mm-hmm. in your mind, but if you get the right person, they become your family. It's not a staffer. It's right. not someone who's filling up space in your house and who's doing things. It's a person who's part of your family. It's a person who, you know, could be included in the Christmas card if you want it, because you don't imagine your day-to-day without them being in that space or in that room and doing work. And so it works when you figure it out. But it, again, keeping them. So I had a couple for who would stay for a couple years, and then it's like, okay, I can't do this anymore. So they would move on. So then finding the next piece that would fit our life was complicated. So when I was a kid, I actually shared an aide with my cousin. He had one, and she came to our house after she was finished with him. She came to our house, and so she was like really involved in our family, and she was our aunt. Like that's who she was. Mm-hmm. But I think I want to say this because I think I'll be remiss if I don't, but I think the perception of people with disabilities and what they can and can't do, like we are constantly now pushing to change that. I'm not saying it's happening in great lightning speed, but it's something that's happening, and this is why self-direction is a thing, why it exists, because someone out there thought like, okay, well, they can do more, their quality of life can improve, and they can be better. For themselves, not for us, for themselves, because this is really a program that is for people with disabilities. It's not about everyone else in their lives. It's not about how easy it will make it for them, which is kind of the models that we followed before. So, I mean, there's a long way to go on every piece of this, but we are working constantly to change that bias, to change that perspective, because that's what it's all about. Because once you can see me as someone like you or someone that can do the same things you do, then I have a bigger chance at actually fulfilling that role. But there's still a long way to go. I know, because there's so many different variables and so many different spinning plates. Like no one is at fault for why the progress is so slow. Because it's just too much at once.
Mm-hmm. We've been stuck in that way of thinking for too long, and now it's taking some time to move out of it. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, well, historically, I think historical perceptions they're passed down generationally. There's nothing we can do to avoid them. It just is. Like, there's some things I just know to be right. Like, I don't have any proof for it, but I just know it to be right. Like, I don't... I put ketchup in the refrigerator because everyone before me has put ketchup in the refrigerator. But there are plenty of people who won't put ketchup in the refrigerator. So, and that's exactly what we're combating as people with disabilities. There are so many beliefs, and there's so many different papers and conversations and dialogues that are have about us, without us, that it's hard to change the perception. And now that you're seeing people trying to take charge of that communication, trying to take charge and say and dictate how that dialogue goes, that's when things are changing. But I think it's going to take a long time. You have to, like me being invited here, you know, being a person with a disability, it's an option. It's a new perspective that is brought to everyone in the room. I'm not saying I'm the greatest, but it could have been anyone. As long, you know, as they have that, it's a kaleidoscope that you have to be willing to have when you're perceiving different things and different projects for it to work.
And I want to thank you for being here and sharing your story today, because it's so important that we hear your perspective. This is a program, a method that benefits people like you, and it's important for all of us to hear what that really means to you. So thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Sure. And I want to hear more of your story, but I'm late for our only break of the hour. So we'll take that short break. And when we come back, we'll hear more from our guests. And I also want to let everyone know that WXXI has a podcast coming out in a few weeks, and it's about young people with disabilities going through different life transitions. It's called Exited, and our reporters, especially our health reporter Karen Shikurji, has been following 8 young people and their families in high school and local universities and sheltered workshops and day programs. She's been working on this project for months and months. She's doing a fantastic job. So we'll hear 5 different segments of that podcast. It launches November 13th. You can hear it on the air, you can hear it on the web, and you can find more information about that on our website, WXXINews.org, in the coming weeks. It's not quite up there yet, but more to come soon. So stay on the lookout for Exited. Short break, more connections next. Coming up in our second hour, maybe you heard that there's some snow in the forecast in Rochester. Well, that's the stage for our conversation about Christmas music. Yes, it's only October, but we'll debut selections from a new album of holiday music recorded on George Eastman's pipe organ. Tune in next hour for some music, some history, and a conversation about the legacy of music lover George Eastman. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Megan Mack, filling in for Evan Dawson today. I wish, listeners, you could hear all the riveting conversations we have during the break. I wish they could be on the air. So I'm going to ask our panelists to try to readdress what we were talking about during the break. And if you're just tuning in, we're talking about a method called self-direction, which helps people living with disabilities live more independently, make choices that work best for them. And our guests this hour include J.D. Flores. She's a disability rights advocate who is in the beginning stages of the self-direction process. Joy Steele has worked in the developmental disabilities field for 30 years. She's the mother of a young man utilizing self-directed services. She's also the director of family advocacy at Starbridge and the co-founder of a website called In the Driver's Seat. Sue Ormandy is also here. She's a self-direction liaison at the Finger Lakes Regional Office for People with Developmental Disabilities. And Molly Clifford's in studio. She's the president of the Board of Directors of Prevention First, also a member of Rochester City Council. So during the break, we were talking about how to access self-direction services, and there are a number of ways or channels through which you can do that. So Sue and Joyce, I'll let you take us down that path.
When Joyce started her path with her son, the program was actually called Consolidated Supports and Services, and it was quite a cumbersome process to get on board, which did take quite a length of time. Now it's called Self-Directed Services. It's a way to access services. And quite honestly, when you're someone like JD who knows what she wants and is ready to go, the process can turn around. She can actually have a plan in place rather quickly. It certainly won't take 4 years. She knows what she wants. Within a couple of months, she'll have something up and running. So I just wanted to make that point clear that the self-direction program, the way to access services, has been in play about 3 years, whereas Consolidated Services was a predecessor that was very cumbersome.
And I want to make clear, when we were accessing CSS services, it was a start and stop, not only because it was a cumbersome process, because we were starting and stopping, because we wanted to make sure that we were submitting a plan that was really going to work for Adam. So we actually were part of that delay as well.
And honestly, anyone that starts a plan can change it as their needs change, as their goals change. It's not a one and done either. So it's very flexible.
Mm-hmm. And JD, I know you have very specific goals about what you want out of your self-direction process. Tell us about your story and what you hope those goals will be.
So I was born in Puerto Rico, so my parents moved here. I've been here for 24-ish years. And so my mom, in order to make things work for me, she had to buy a house, a home, where we all share now, currently. But as I age, I want to have my own home. I want to have my own, you know, piece of land and be like, oh, this is mine. I rule here, kind of thing. Really, because I want to have my own study, but that's my own thing. But so I really am seeking self-direction because I want to buy a home. I want to purchase a home. I've been working in the city of Rochester for the people of Rochester for a long time, and I'm really invested in my community. And I think that that's just the next step for me, is to have a home. And that's something I wouldn't be able to do without self-direction, just because there's so many rules about the money people with disabilities can make, and what benefits and what systems are going to be affected depending on your income. So self-direction kind of gives me a more structured way of doing that without having to guess and check and pause and stop, kind of, so that I can really eventually get to own a home. I mean, it might not happen for a couple of years because of money-wise, but still just having the process to follow to do that is beneficial. So my plan is to own a home and to hire a driver. So right now, currently, I'm at the mercy of other people whenever, you know, they're free to drive me around and pick me up and whatever. So it kind of limits me socially, and it limits what I can and can't do activity-wise because I'm depending on other people to drive me around. So I would like to hire a driver to take me here or take me there, you know, to get errands done. You know, running errands for me is difficult because I have to pick a day that somebody else is also running errands so that it doesn't seem like you're only doing it for me. You know, we're doing this as a joint effort. So those are two key factors for me right now. I'm pretty sure other things will come under light once I get my real plan written out. But my biggest driving force is to own my own home.
Mm-hmm. And because this is radio and not television, people can't see that you're using a wheelchair right now. You moved here when you were three because your parents were seeking more medical assistance for you. Right.
So I was born and so I had a lot of delays, like physical delays. And so the doctors just kept telling my mom, like, I was going to outgrow it. And then one day I was just going to catch up and the learning curve wasn't going to exist anymore. But that just wasn't a thing for me. So my parents came here to Rochester. My mom packed up everything and just moved. And she lived in the attic for a little while. And, it was like an apartment. But so we moved here, and I was diagnosed when I was three with cerebral palsy. And then from there on, we've, you know, taken advantage of some services. Some services we just, you know, kind of lucked out on, depending on who was my MSC, my Medicaid service coordinator. So I use a chair to get around. His name is Clyde. Me and Clyde, we kind of are in business right now. So that's what my predominant way of getting from point A to point B. My parents have also, you know, I've had the privilege of owning my own vehicle. Well, technically the bank owns it, but I own my own vehicle. So I have the luxury of just saying, hey, can you drive the van? And then we can go wherever. But that's not something that happens for everyone. And so I went to college. I went to SUNY Brockport. I got my bachelor's degree in sociology and African American studies. That's also was a privilege because my parents could drive me back into from college or come rescue me if the electricity went out or if there was a bad snowstorm. You know, so those are things that happen. My parents also bought a home. I had to wait on certain lists for years to get a ramp in front of my house and certain, a couple months or years to get my bathroom renovated. But these are things that all happen, throughout my life course to make me who I am today, kind of. I went to the city school district for education. So I was the only person in my school with a disability, a physical disability. It took a while to get into a space where I was with other people with disabilities because we are so segregated in the city of Rochester. And I think that happens overall. That's not just a city thing. I think that's happening everywhere, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. How was it in the classroom being the only person in a wheelchair? Do you feel like people treated you differently?
I wouldn't say my peers treated me differently. Well, okay, they did. Anytime it's partner work, people don't ever pick me. It's so weird. It's like they don't know. Like, so I'm always picked last or, like, assigned to someone. And it's also, it's hard to, because people have these preconceived notions that people with disabilities aren't smart. I was always in honors classes, so that always took a time for the teachers to adjust that I was going to exist in this space. So it's always, you got to fight to get there, fight to stay there, and fight to make it out kind of thing, in my life, at least. Mm-hmm.
I know you've been doing public speaking since you were pretty young. Is that something that you talk to groups about, just misconceptions and the stigmatization, the unnecessary stigmatization? It's just, I can't imagine, because I am not in your position and I don't want to try to, because that would be unfair, but I think kids are born with empathy and they have to learn to judge someone in a negative way. So how do you teach the people around them to think otherwise?
Well, and my job, to me, when I get invited anywhere, is to always make people feel uncomfortable. That's just who I've had to be for so long. So, I mean, it's a big role to take on. I'm not going to say I do it perfectly. I'm not going to say I get every story just right. I mean, I just know what I know. And so I try to mention things that are thought-provoking or that are pull on your emotional strings. And I'm as transparent as I can be. There is nothing that is off, you know, that you can't ask me about, because if I don't talk about it, who will, kind of thing. So I try to be as open and as transparent and available to them. So anyone, any class I've ever been to, I always share my personal information. You can always come back to me if you want to just have a conversation, because that's the only way people are going to understand that this is a problem, that, you know, we need to change our thought process, that we need to be aware that these issues do exist within our community, and that, you know, some people sometimes, like, it is your fault. Like, you know what I mean? Like, so I went to a restaurant and every waiter bumped behind my chair. So now if someone bumps into you, they're going to say, excuse me. No one said, excuse me. No one apologized. So I told the manager, I said, your waiters are rude. I said, you need to train them to be better aware of their space. And he was like, well, I can't teach them manners. Well, then you're part of the problem, because you're choosing to forget that this wheelchair is part of me. It's part of my body. It is who I am, in a sense. So don't undervalue Clyde because he's not living, because he is, because I am. So I think it's always just, it depends on the crowd. Students don't always have questions, which is the weirdest thing, because I talk about things that make them uncomfortable, so they don't know what to say. But afterwards, it's always like, oh, thank you. Some people will cry, and then, you know, some people will say, well, okay, well, you've taught me. And they do different. And so I can only see by action. I have one experience where I went to speak to some dentist, and the next time it just so happened that she was my dentist. And she was like, oh, do you remember me? I'm like, sure, yeah, cool, hey. And then so the next appointment I had, her assistant was like overly helpful, and she was just in my space and wouldn't let me do what I needed to do. And she stopped her. She said, no. She knows what she's doing. She's got this. So I didn't have to advocate for myself. She did it for me in that moment. And that's really what I live for, is for you to understand that everyone knows what they're the expert on themselves. So they'll know how to tell you and how to move. And if you don't give people the space to be themselves, then they won't know what to do with it, and things become complicated. So knowing that I could teach her that was super helpful. And then just seeing my life pay dividends and being invited into different spaces is where I know what I'm doing. Like, mm-hmm. In a sense. Mm-hmm.
You're reminding me of a conversation my colleague Beth Adams had with Amy Mullins, who was inducted into the Women's National Hall of Fame this year. And Amy uses prosthetic legs, and she was invited to speak at an elementary school. And there were kids gathering around her, and they were excited to see her, and they were doing projects. And before Amy's presentation began, the teachers said to the kids, don't ask her about her legs, don't look at them, don't bring that up, pretend that that's not there. And Amy said, I need all the adults to go out of the room. I just want to talk to the kids for a couple minutes by myself. And they left, and Amy said to the kids, you can ask me anything. You can touch my legs. You can ask me questions. You can share whatever you're thinking. I want you to understand that I'm just like you. My legs look different. And so she did this activity with them where they had to design legs that would help her jump over a house. And the kids came up with really great ideas, but they said, well, why, let's have you fly instead. And Amy said, then I realized, I mean, kids, they don't see these things. It's adults sometimes that are pushing perspectives onto them that are characterizing how they think. So JD, when you say that, when you go into schools or you go into places and you do have to advocate for yourself, or you find someone who finally says, just let her do her thing. She knows what she's doing. That has to be empowering. But it comes with a cost, because why should you have to do that in the first place?
Well, it is, but it isn't. It is, because it's like, oh, man, I taught her that. Like, cool. Because, you mm-hmm. know, I don't, there's no way to really measure success in what I do. There, you know, on the advocacy circuit, there's no way. Because there's some classes that it's like I leave and I'm like, yeah, I did that. Then there's other classes like, okay, well, what stories could I have shared that would have created conversations differently? So I never really know. But I think kids are amazing, and they're so, I just have to show them. I have so many cool gadgets, and they're like, so the other day I was at Panera, and there's a kid, and he's whispering about me, and his mom is like, shh, be quiet, don't say that. So I turn around, I'm like, hey, how you doing? And so he starts looking at my chair. I'm like, you want to see some tricks? Because my chair like tilts and leans and does all these things. And he's like, yeah. So I like start showing him. He's like, what? And then I'm like, come see the buttons. And then so I show him the buttons, and I let him press buttons. And then he's like, do you want to come to my lemonade stand? He's like, mom, can she come? Can he come too? Because then I told him that Clyde was my chair. And he's like, can they come? And I'm like, yeah, I'll come. And so we had this whole like 10-minute interaction. I didn't even think to ask his parent to talk, but it was like, don't tell him not to say anything to me, because then they become adults who don't say anything to anyone, and what they do is stare. And staring is like the hardest thing for me to deal with. Like, just tell me what you don't understand about this, because then we can talk about it. And so I think people are just afraid to talk, and they're just afraid to ask questions, because you can't. Like, it's just like if you tell me you don't like pineapples, but why? Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm going to wonder, like, what is it that drove you that way? So we can just need to be open with communication. And I think that's something we lack as just people right now. We don't know how to ask, you know. So I had a friend in college who was giving me Skittles, and I couldn't turn. One of the things is I can't turn my hand right side up. And so she's like, I don't know how to do this, and just handed me the bag. And she's like, we got this. And so we figured it out from there. But she had to be open to say, I don't know how to do this. How do we make it work? And I think that's when people become receptive. So it's just a learning curve. It's hard because that's the space I'm always in. So I've come to the conclusion that there will be more times that I'm the teacher than I am the student. Not to say that I will never be the student, but it's just more times where I'll be the teacher. And that's okay. That's just, you know, my purpose. That's just what I'm supposed to do for right now. And maybe forever, but it doesn't, you know, as long as I'm open to it. I'm not going to say that every time I'd be, like, super happy to talk to people. But for majority of the point, like, that's just my role. That's who I'm supposed to be in different interactions.
I'm learning a lot from you, and I thank you.
No
thank
worries. Thank you for the opportunity to be here.
Listeners, we're talking about the self-direction process for people living with disabilities. There's a couple of minutes left. You can call the program at 844-295-TALK. That's 844-295-TALK. Or if you're in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. And with our last couple of minutes, I want to turn to Molly Clifford, because she's working on a project called Safe at Home. And Molly, this is for people to stay safe if there's a fire or other kind of emergency in their home. Tell us about what that program is aiming to accomplish.
Sure. Thanks, Megan. And it is the tail end here of Fire Prevention Month, so a perfect time to talk about it. So Safe at Home really works with people with developmental disabilities and their circle of support to look at everyone's individual residence and basically give some suggestions about things that they can do to make their residence safer. And then, like we ask of everybody else in the world, to take some time to make sure that they have the skills should a fire break out, to know what to do. And unfortunately, because the risk is higher with people with disabilities, it is an important skill. And what we found with people with disabilities, as well as their families, they were worried about what would happen if there were a fire, and they weren't always sure what they would do. And so to have some people with the expertise to say, you know, have you thought about putting a smoke alarm here? Have you thought about what your exit plan would be here? They found that really helpful, and it sort of built confidence all the way around. So it's been a great experience.
I know you've just completed your pilot program, so what's the next step, and when will this be accessible to more people?
Right. Well, it actually is accessible to people right now, and you can go to preventionfirst.org and find out more about the Safe at Home program. But, you know, I was thinking about JD as she moves into her new home. That would be great to come and work with her. And, you know, again, based on what JD thinks is important to your own, you know, personal living situation, let's take a look. Let's make sure your house is as safe as it can be. So it is available to folks thanks to our donors. The training is free and the assessment is free to people who are interested in having it. So we're excited about bringing it to the community.
Have you talked to people who directly benefit from this, and what are they saying? What do they think about the program?
Yeah, we've actually had some really great experiences. Young man Ryan, who just moved into his new home situation, and his parents were very supportive of that, but had basically met us at the door with 5 smoke alarms and said, okay, what do we do with these? And so we were able to talk about, you know, does Ryan do cooking? What kind of what does he think his needs are, and then work around that. So it's been great. We've learned a lot along the way and got some great feedback, and really found that, you know, people want to live more safely as it is, so they're very willing to learn and be a part of that experience. So good retention of our basic safety skills. So it's been great.
Awesome. And where, repeat that website for us again.
It's www.prevention1st.org.
Perfect. And Joyce, in our very last few minutes, I do want to talk about In the Driver's Seat, because you created that with a friend of mine,
Cindy Lill.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because you found a need, there was a gap in information. You couldn't find or families couldn't find information they needed. So you and Cindy teamed up. And yep. Tell us what the website looks like.
So it's www.inthedriverseat.org, by the way. And actually, we created it because we both believe in self-direction and what it can do for families and for the and our children. So we created it because we felt like we needed one place in layman's terms for families and individuals with disabilities to go to kind of figure out, you know, what it's all about, what they need to do, what the next steps are. And actually, much of the information that's on the website is a result of our interactions with either professionals or families with disabilities.
Mm-hmm. So inthedriverseat.org. Perfect. Yeah.
Thank you.
Listeners, if you didn't catch any of the websites that we mentioned this hour, I will post them on the podcast page for this hour so you can check them out. I'd like to thank all of my guests for being here today. JD Flores, Joy Steele, Sue Ormandy, and Molly Clifford, thank you all so much for sharing all this information, and your stories are all rock stars. I love it. This is A Move to Include conversation. And listeners, again, just a reminder about the upcoming podcast by my colleague Karen Shikurji. It's called Exited. It'll be available in the next few weeks. It launches November 13th. And it's all about people with disabilities going through different life transitions. So be sure to check that out. More Connections is next.